catches, puts up a three. Long go, rebound box, back out to Allen. History final, bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining.
Ovechkin, full blast the other way. Fires, score! The Caps win.
Here come the Leafs. It's their turn to center Austin Matthews with Connor Brown. In under Kaiser. Gardner comes up late. His pass side of the net. Matthews backhander scores!
It'll be Wade up top. He gets a pick for Bosch. Wade turns the corner. Behind his back. Bosch for the lead. Got it! 5 tenths left. Bosch.
And we are back on the Crunch, folks. How you doing? 7:05 Eastern. And 4:05 Pacific, and something 05 if you are listening anywhere else around the world. Now, folks, we got a really packed show today, okay? Favorite golf tournament of the year, in my opinion, Players' Championship. I like it a lot more than any of the majors, to be honest. And I think this year we're going to have a really good field. Big Cat was out last week with injury. You know, we got a lot of the stars peaking here. And frankly, I think we're going to have a good tournament. And sorry about that, folks. Just had to close the window here. Had some very loud animals. But back on the PGA Championship, look, I like it for a few reasons, okay? It is the Players' Championship. It's not a major. But think of it like this, okay? Let me try and relate it to other sports here. You look at, say, NBA players putting on their own little blacktop tournament, right? That'd be pretty fun. Little mini tournament. Doesn't need to be serious, right? But in this case, it is. And we got a lot of big names playing. And the other thing I like about the PGA Championship, excuse me, the Players' Championship, is the big name groupings. The featured groups that they have are awesome, to say the least. And they got a bunch of them, too, right? What the PGA Tour does wrong is that they try and balance out their schedule because they try and appeal to, you know, broader golf, right? They know that there's a lot of diehards that are watching. And they don't put that many featured groups. They have. I'm not saying there aren't any featured groups. They just don't put that many. What the Players got right is that they put in featured groups with a ton of star power. And a lot of them. Okay, we look at Webb Simpson. Okay. He won the Players last year. Patrick Reed, he's always, always a force to be reckoned with. And Tiger Woods, I mean, this is a pretty good threesome. We got emotion from the Big Cat and Patrick Reed. Webb's a little more boring and tempered. But again, these are three good golfers. I'm excited to see it. Ricky Fowler, we know I'm not a big Ricky guy. But nonetheless, he's a big star, and he brings out the guns. Brooks Koepka. I mean, where do we start with this guy? He's the Hulk. He's a monster, to say the least. And honestly, he's got a great shot to win this tournament, along with Jordan Spieth, who's really struggled the past year and a half, but he's still a big name, and he's won enough majors to really send a message. And, you know, he's worthy of being in one of these groups. One of the other things I would say is Francesco Molinari, Tony Finau, and Jason Day is an underrated group, to say the least. Francesco's just been on a tear. He's been a little under the radar after his win for the Claret Jug. He won last week, obviously, at the Arnold Palmer. Just a crazy Sunday finish. Raced from way back to then vault to the front of the leaderboard. We're back. Apologies, folks. Just a little bit of technical difficulties. But back to what I was saying here. Players Championship. The featured groups look pretty good. Then on Friday, you got JT, Justin Rose, and Xander Schauffele. I mean, this is a big-name group. There's no doubt about it. And I'm thoroughly excited for this tournament. The Players is always a great tournament. It's always in Florida, Ponte Verde. Last year, I mean, these guys tore it up. I hope it's a little bit tougher this year, but, I mean, 17th. You know, the Island Par 3, always fun to watch. And so let me just check in that this mic is working. We're back on the air here. Apologies for all of this, but let me get into my final point here, okay? My pick to win the Players, which is a pretty good tournament, to say the least, one of my favorites, Bryson DeChambeau, won the Shriners Hospitals for Children's Open earlier this year. He's been a little quiet, and this guy is, he's a cold-blooded assassin. There's no way around it. So I really think that he's going to sneak up and win this. People forget last year the tear he was on. I mean, this guy was tremendous. Came in, won two playoff events. And honestly, out of the young guys, I'd put him right there. Maybe one or two out of the young guns, right? Obviously, Ricky Fowler, impressive. You know, Xander Schauffele, impressive. But Bryson came out, and he came out in a big way last year in the playoffs. And I think he's retooled himself. He's gotten ready. He's adjusted to the fame, and, you know, the eyes are on him. No doubt about it, right? He's in a big-name commercial now with the big... So I think it took him a little bit of time to get used to over the year. He didn't play as well as I think he would have hoped. And when I mean the year, I mean, you know, the winter swing, November, December, Jan, Feb, March. But if there's anyone who can pound the ball at this type of course and really, really get on a groove, it's Bryson. And, I mean, the odds I was seeing yesterday for 29-1, money, right? 31-1 today, money. So I've thrown a small amount on Bryson, and I hope he does well. I think he will do well. That's a really good payoff, and this guy in a pretty good group here with Bubba Watson and Billy Horschel, yeah, they'll push him to succeed. I think he'll play well, and I'm excited for this tournament. Folks, stick around. Right after the break, I'm going to have a guest on here to talk about the Leafs and their playoff predictions here. New guest on the show. Stick around. We'll be back on The Crunch.
I think we can. I mean, we take a couple things into consideration here. We're a much deeper team than last year. I get it. Last year we weren't supposed to necessarily compete with them. We took them all the way to game seven. I can definitely see it going the distance again this year. Probably expecting another game seven. Yeah, just looking at the rosters, I mean, just at least on paper, I definitely like our forwards better. I like our goaltending. I think obviously Freddie gets the edge there. The defense is obviously are probably probably stronger, but yeah, I'd say we have the tools definitely this year to definitely at least compete with them. I would not be surprised if we got past the Bruins this year. I got to tell you, though, as you mentioned, like last night, big game, I got my eyes posted on Tampa Bay Lightning, man. They're going to be a problem.
I'm with you 100% on the Lightning situation. I mean, man, they have speed on all four lines. Their defense is solid, to say the least. I mean, probably an elite defense. And... We had problems with Vasilevsky, but okay, let me touch on the Bruins part here.
Yeah.
Couple things I think the Leafs need to do to beat the Bruins. First off, you got to play your game. And what do I mean by that, right? So we pick up Nick Petan. The fourth line is already small.
Mm-hmm.
look, I don't want a guy like Tyler Ennis trying to fire up the boys by trying to lay a hit in Chara. What's likely going to happen? What's likely going to happen? Is Ennis really going to give Chara a nice rub into the boards and fire up the boys? No. What's really going to happen is Ennis is going to try and hit him. Chara's just going to drop the shoulder. He won't even need to actually extend his shoulder. He'll just drop it a bit. Ennis will go flying, and the Bruins will go the other way. So that's the first thing. Stick to speed. Don't try and out-hit the Bruins. You know the Bruins are going to try and pummel you into the ground, all right? We know that. We know Marchand. Like, this is their MO, and it's been their MO for a while. We got to stick to speed, and we cannot deviate from the plan. Second thing I want to say for the Leafs, you got to play your big defenseman bigger minutes, okay? What do I mean by that? Ryan Sutter, 26 minutes over in Minnesota, right? He's a pretty good defenseman, right? Guys like Erik Karlsson, Burns, Doughty, they're all up at 25 minutes a night. Morgan Rielly, who I think is a Norris contender, to say the least, he's only playing 22 minutes. Jake Muzzin, 21 minutes. Look, I get it. The season, you don't need to overextend guys. But there is no reason to not play these guys big minutes in a playoff series, because if we don't play these guys big minutes, we're going to lose. We're going to lose. I don't want to see Igor Ozhuganov and Martin Marincin out there for 15 to 20 minutes. It's a joke.
No, yeah, you're right. I definitely got to agree with you. At least on the physicality part, I mean, as you said, we definitely know what their MO is going to be. They're a much bigger team than we are. As you so rightfully pointed out, our last two lines, even the third line's a little small. But I mean, you're right. In terms of playing our game, I mean, one of the ways we can counteract that, that we've seen some success, albeit limited, is exactly what you said, playing our game. I think speed is going to be a big factor. You're right. I don't like the matchup, per se, Patan or Ennis, on any of those big Bruins defensemen. I really don't. But just in terms of the matchup, in terms of the lineup, I think we'll be, I think at least further down the lineup, we'll be all right. If you were to ask me who I had my eyes on, I would definitely say that first line. I mean, that first line's got to be contained. Marchand, you already pointed out, we all know what he's about. He can hurt you more ways than one, that's for sure. So that first line, Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, and Danton Heinen's actually looking pretty good on that first line. I gotta say, he's fitting pretty nice. But after that, I mean, if you were to ask me, put aside the physicality for a sec, if you were to ask me just at least based on just straight skill, some speed, you know, I'm not really too worried about Jake DeBrusk on that second line. I'm not too worried about Krejci or, you know, their big addition this year was Charlie Coyle. Am I worried about Charlie Coyle? Not particularly. They do scare me. You know, that top pairing, as you said, Dano Char, Charlie McAvoy, they're going to play them heavy, heavy minutes. They're definitely going to be relied upon. So you're right. I think Riley's minutes got to go up. He's got to be at least at 24. I think he will be. I don't see how Babcock keeps that second pairing out there too long. So I definitely think Rielly ends up touching around 24 minutes a night. I think Muzzin gets relied on heavily. His play's got to improve, though. I got to tell you, man, it's been kind of worrisome seeing him last couple games. He's trying to do too much. I mean, if you want to counteract some of that physicality, some of that grit, man, I mean, Muzzin, that's what he does, right? Two-way defenseman, you stay at home. I want him to sit at the blue line. He's got to rush the puck, obviously, when he sees the opportunity, but I want to see him sit at the blue line, take the big bomb, and throw the body a bit. So we'll see how he ends up doing, but, no, you're absolutely right. The physicality is definitely a flag for us there.
Yeah, and the thing about Muzzin is I always give guys a break, personally. When they're playing on a new team, I always think it takes a bit of time. It was weird. He came in, first few games was lighting it up. I mean, he had the huge goal.
Yeah, he was lighted up. Oh, man. First game. You're right.
And you're right. He's done maybe a little too much. I don't know if it's a mixture of that or maybe Babcock's asked him to change his role a bit to fit the team. I don't know.
Right.
But I'm with you. Just make the hits when they're there. Don't go extend yourself against a team like the Bruins, say the least. I want to touch on another point. Hyman, you're right. him and Connor Brown have been just polar opposites, man. Hyman has trended up. He's looked great. Meanwhile, Brown's been mostly with the Kadri and Nylander line, and he's been like a bit of an anchor there. Man, like, look, I know we're going to run into cap space. We'll touch on that in a bit. Or cap space issues, excuse me. But, man, Hyman's been a great addition, hard-nosed, and he's starting to finish a little better. Connor Brown has scared me because he is not trended up. He's trended down. And it's worrisome, right? We need depth. The Boston Bruins, you're right. You know, DeBrusk, Charlie Coyle, I'm not particularly worried about them. However, when you put them up against guys like Connor Brown who are not producing, that's troublesome, especially when you know Bergeron, Marchand, Krejci, Backes, these guys who are on the top six, are likely going to provide a solid counter to Tavares and Matthews. Whether it's even, whether they play a little worse or a little better, I think it'll be close to even. We need guys like Brown, who had 20 goals in his rookie year, let's not forget, to put the puck in the net more than six times. Season's almost over, pal. We got the real season starting, and it is worrisome. I'm 100% with you on that. I'll touch on one more thing. Nylander, we got to put him with Matthews. Enough's enough. Enough's enough. He's been fine with Kadri, but I mean, you know, he's got the legs going under him. He's looked pretty good. Put him with Matthews. Let's start making something happen, all right? Another nice thing is Kapanen on the third line adds a little bit of speed with Kadri's grit, and he probably won't score as much, which will probably knock down his potential contract. But on another note, more importantly, get Nylanders with Matthew. I mean, imagine that 1-2 punch here, okay? You got Marner, Tavares, and Hyman, obviously, on that line, and then Matthews and Nylander on that second line. Who can stack up against us in 1-2 punch? No one can, right?
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, that top six, I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, I'm a big Nylander guy. I think the contract's going to end up looking real nice for us down the road, projected at least point per game player. But you're right, all of his trajectories, all of his projections were based on him playing with Matthews. I mean, those two together, man, just even throughout the season, regular season, you guys remember, we remember watching them whenever they came out on 3-on-3 overtime. It's a goal, man. Automatic goal. So I was definitely a happy camper to at least see him get some time with Matthews last night against the Lightning on that line. Hopefully get a little bit of spark going again, albeit they didn't play too well. I mean, there's a lot of factors going into that. Matthews did all right. Yeah, I agree. For the playoffs, at least, I don't know what Babcock's doing. I mean, they've clearly had the chemistry. They've clearly had the teamwork. That Nylander-Matthews 1-2 punch, as you said, I mean, those 1-2 punches coming down the first couple lines, Tavares, Marner, Matthews, Nylander, that, as you said, almost impossible to match with. And I definitely like that a lot better. I mean, than having Connor Brown or on that line, or Cappy on that line. I think you're right. I think Cappy would complement the Kadri line pretty well with his speed. Even forcing him to play a bit of a lesser role, I think would be a little beneficial to him. He gets to play with a lesser matchup. I mean, we take a look at the Bruins' projected third line right now. You guys got Joakim Nordstrom on the left side. I believe Trent Frederick's playing center on that side. I mean, that has exposure for Kapanen written all over it. So not only would a Nylander move to the second line, I think, provide a lot of benefits. I think Kapi dropping down to that third line would prove to be a pretty smart move as well.
100%. Okay, I got to ask you something. This will be more off-season based, but what are we looking at in a cap space situation? How much do you think Marner will get in his new deal? And how does that affect the other RFAs we got?
Man, this is the Leafs fan dilemma, if we can call it that. I mean, Marner, I gotta believe. I mean, he's playing himself. I mean, what he projected 100 plus points. He's playing himself into at least, I would say conservatively, a 10 million AAV contract. I can't really speak onto the term. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw around kind of a Matthew style, maybe a little bit shorter of a term, maybe 5-6 years. Probably not go for the home run necessarily, but definitely at least pushing 10. And I think that's including the quote-unquote hometown discount that everyone's expecting him to take. So I would not be surprised if we see him get around 10. I mean, a lot of people like to quote the Draisaitl contract. As a comparison, even the Pastrnak contract, I mean, Draisaitl was at, what, 8.7? He got rewarded for putting up 77 points playing with McDavid, right? So you got Marner putting up almost 100 points already playing with Johnny T. I mean, he's got a – I believe he's got a touch 10. And if he does, that definitely puts us in a tough spot. I mean, projected salary cap space, what do we had? We had about $27 million. That's before the Matthews signing. We're sitting at about $15 million. And, man, it's it would be – I would definitely think it would be naive at this point to assume that nobody's getting squeezed out. I mean, the roster is just – there's just no way
– it's got to be Gardner.
Yeah, there's no way the roster looks like it is currently by this time next season.
Yeah, and I think it's got to be Gardner. I've said it before. I think the Leafs will be able to squeeze him under 10. Couple reasons here. One, you look at his numbers last couple years with he was with Bozak. I always call him Tyler Bozo. I was never a fan of him. But anyway, he was with JVR and Bozo, right? And he put up pretty good numbers, right? 60 or so points each year. And then Tavares, a bona fide star, comes to town, and it drastically improves his numbers, right? Will they be able to use that to their advantage when they're talking with the Marner with Marner's agent? Maybe. You look at the Draisaitl contract, even the Kucherov deal is 9.5. I think they'll it'll be tough, but I think they'll be able to squeeze him under $10 million. And boy, do I hope so. If they do that, they can then probably get bridge deals, I think, on Johnsson and Kapanen, each under $3 million, and you're basically telling him, look, great year, but you were with Matthews. Prove it again. We'll give you money when Marlowe's contract's off the books. And a little bit of a race there. I still think Brown's getting dealt in the offseason. I know he was close with Edmonton. They were close to making a deal there. And I think he'll go in the offseason for a later round draft pick or prospect or something of that nature. There's just no way. But for now, like I said, I think the Leafs have a good shot. You keep Gardner for this run. I'm not a huge fan of Gardner, but, I mean, do I like Gardner or do I like Ozhuganov, Marinchin, and Ron Hainsey? So take your pick. Take your pick, and I'll take Gardner on that front. Christian, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it and hope to have you back in due course here.
Sounds good, boss. Appreciate you having me on, and good luck with the rest of your shows. I appreciate you.
All right, folks, right after the break, I'm going to break down NFL free agency. A lot of big moves today, and then I'll invite on Matt Zerzolo to talk NASCAR. This is The Crunch. Stick around. On the night you were born, all the earth stood still. They whispered. And we are back on The Crunch, folks. How you doing? 7:33 Eastern, 4:33 Pacific, and something 33 everywhere else around the world. NFL free agency just opened up. A lot of big moves being made. You know, I can analyze all of them, and I will. But I want to touch on one player who I think really scored big in his new deal, and one team that really, really surprised me really in terms of the moves they made. But I'll just give you a quick recap here. Trey Flowers, one of the top defensive ends in the game, moving from the Patriots to the Lions on a 5-year, $90 million deal. Landon Collins moving to the Redskins on a 6-year deal, surprising to say the least. Le'Veon Bell still unrestricted. We'll have to see where he goes. While Anthony Barr spurred the Jets last minute and stayed in Minnesota on a 5-year deal worth $67.5 million. Saints moves, you know, I had to talk about Saints. They picked up Latavius Murray on a 4-year deal for $14 million, spelling the end of the career in New Orleans for Mark Ingram, multi-time All-Star. And look, personally, I think it's a good deal. I like Ingram. I thought he was a great player. And he was an all-star Pro Bowler for a while in New Orleans. But there's a difference between Mark Ingram, Pro Bowler, and Alvin Kamara,
a transcendent running back. Not even close. No question at all. And so, at the end of the day, you got to give Kamara the more touches. Latavius Murray's a nice downhill runner to complement him in that clearly second slot. And, you know, I wish Mark Ingram the best. I always liked him. I thought he was a great player, but when we look at some of these other moves, and there were some big moves, no doubt about it, right? Green Bay Packers not playing around. They're looking to really work on the defensive end of the ball, signing Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith to big deals there. You know, it was embarrassing in Green Bay. There's no two ways around it. It was embarrassing in Green Bay this year. They're looking to correct the problem. They fired McCarthy. They're revamping that defensive line. They're spending some cash, and I like it. The Raiders as well. They're not stopping after AB. They're in on LaMarcus Joyner here too. 4-year, $42 million. For the free safety. Not bad. I mean, do I think the Raiders will win the Super Bowl or are a legit contender? Not really, but they're interesting and they're worth watching. And Teddy Bridgewater re-signing in New Orleans, a backup QB, that surprised me. Sean Payton said he's got his QB of the future here. The thing about Teddy that I find weird is that, you know, he showed some promise in Minnesota. He got hurt, and it hasn't really gotten any reps. He actually turned down a bigger deal in Miami to stay at the Saints. So I just, there's something strange that he wants to be Drew Brees' backup when Brees has another year on his deal for sure. And, I mean, he put together a near MVP quality season. Like, is he really going to retire after this year if the Saints do not win? I don't know. Hard to tell. We'll just have to see on that front. But let me talk about the one player that scored big and the one team that scored big. Player who scored big? Oh, St. Nick. Nick Foles. 4-year, $88 million in Jacksonville. I mean, look, he deserves it, man. I know people were saying that he hasn't played all that much. True. But let's be honest. Beating Tom Brady head-to-head in the Super Bowl a year and a half ago, not even, a year and a bit ago, is worth at least half a season in experience, if not more. There's no bigger stage. And let's not forget Carson Wentz injured again this year. He brought them in for the stretch run, made them to the playoffs, won a playoff game in Chicago. Okay, that Chicago was looking like a Super Bowl contender with that defense. He went out and beat them. And then, I got to admit, against the Saints, he scared me. He really scared me. Let's be honest. If Aguilar catches that ball here, if Aguilar catches that ball and doesn't let it squirt right through his hands, it's over. It's like Saints might lose, but he missed it, and it was a good throw by Nick Foles. But the point I'm trying to make is, this guy's a legit QB, and he deserves his big money deal, which he got. $88 million. The other point I want to make on it, I mean, the Jags won the division last year. Let's not get confused. Leonard Fournette was hurt for a variety, for you know, various points in the year, and their defense was beat up and knacked up a bit. I mean, this is a pretty good Jags team. And you're talking about Blake Bortles, who just a year and a bit ago scared Tom Brady before he made it to the Super Bowl and faltered to Nick Foles' Eagles. Nick Foles is not the best quarterback in the world, and I'm not saying he is, but he's above average, he's proved he can play, and he's going to a Jacksonville team that's legit. I think people are really underrating this move. I really think, we'll see how the draft goes, but I really think that the Jags are going to win their division, barring anything crazy happening in the draft here. But I really think that they will surprise a lot of people, hop back up with Houston near the top of that division, and really beat out the mediocre Titans and whatnot, to be honest. The team that really surprised me, though, the Buffalo Bills. I mean, are you kidding me? The Buffalo Bills making splashes in free agency? I mean, a four-year deal with Cole Beasley? That's no joke, okay? Picking up John Brown from the Ravens? No joke. He was the best receiver there, in my opinion. Picking up Kevin Johnson, cornerback? Solid. That's nothing to sneeze at. And bringing on veteran Frank Gore on a one-year, $2 million deal. Look, I thought the Bills were a joke last year. Their offense was terrible. It averaged under 17 points a game. But I have to commend the Bills in a few respects. First is, they're sticking with Josh Allen, and they're actually giving him a chance. They're giving him a chance. Look, I don't like Josh Allen. I didn't think he was a great quarterback. I know that their offensive line had holes, which they've helped. They brought in a new center here as well. But I didn't really like Josh Allen. The Bills, though, said, no, we think Josh Allen is a legit quarterback, can make some good plays. He just needs a little bit of a structure around him, which is totally fair. And so they pick up two legit wide receivers, pick up some O-line strength, and a veteran running back, who last year, I know Frank Gore's old, but 4.6 yards a carry? I mean, this will give Bills fans a legit chance at seeing what their roster's made of, at seeing if they actually have a shot. They really spent some good money there in Buffalo, and honestly, I would not be surprised if they break 500 and maybe scare a couple teams, right? The Dolphins, I don't really trust them. The Patriots are the Patriots, but even they're starting to slack a bit in the season. Will they win their division? Likely. But I don't see why the Bills can't get to 9-7 and at least challenge for a playoff spot. I really like these moves by the Bills, and I'm not a Bills fan to say the least. I've had a last year I had on Bills analyst Riley Chavrella here, but, you know, for once in a long, long time, I think the Buffalo Bills actually have a strategy in place, and I give them creds for that. Will it work? We'll have to see. I'm not convinced on Josh Allen, but now he has a legit structure, and we see what happened with Jared Goff, right? We see what happens when coaches adjust. You bring in new players and new strategies. Things can turn 0 to 100 real quick. So I commend the Bills for really making a couple moves that are legit and starting to you know, plant a seed of respectability back in that franchise, because damn, they deserve it. They deserve it real bad. So those are my two picks that I think did very well in free agency. My two winners, Nick Foles, $88 million deal, baby. He's only played in like six or seven games these last couple years, being Carson Wentz's backup. But boy, he's proved it, man. You outgunned Tom Brady in a Super Bowl, it says something, and it says something big. So I give a lot of respect to Nick Foles, and right move for him, man. 4 years, that's a decent championship window, or at least playoff window for the Jags, who have, you know, have ebbs and flows for the last several years. And then a year and a half ago, it looked like they found their stride, but a lot of injuries caught up with them. So I think the Jacksonville Jags are a team to watch, and the Bills got a little bit of respectability from my end, bringing in some legit receivers, giving Josh Allen a chance, not letting him out to dry like Josh Rosen in Arizona, who I think, by the way, will not be starting next year. I think they'll take Kyler Murray, but that's for a draft segment later in the year. But give the Bills credit. I like them a lot. Folks, right after the break, I'm going to bring on NASCAR analyst Matthew Zerzola to break down the biggest in racing over the past couple of weeks. Tune in. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network.
How's it going?
Once was a thought. And we are back on The Crunch, folks. How you doing? 7:46 Eastern Time, 4:46 Pacific Time, something 46 around the world. Joining me now, Matthew Zerzola, racing analyst. Matthew, how you doing?
Not too bad, Nicola. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you, as always. So, I want to get up to date here around the racing world, so to speak.
There's been a lot happening. First thing I want to get your take on here is the IndyCar race. That's been important these last week or two. Break that down.
Yeah, so this was the first race of the season, the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. So just the first race of the season, usually not too crazy. We just kind of learn which teams are dominant, which teams are not. So the two teams that really stood out were Penske and Chip Ganassi, as usual, two top teams in the sport. Newgarden and Will Power started on the pole, both Team Penske drivers, so that was very good for Team Penske in that sense. And Joseph Newgarden was able to take it home. He was the former 2017 champ. So big success for Penske all around, because all their drivers finished in the top 10. And I'll go through the top 10 list right now. We got Joseph Newgarden, who finished in first. We got Scott Dixon for Chip Ganassi, the defending 2018 champ. We got Will Power in third. Felix Rosenquist, actually he's a breakout star. This is his first season in IndyCar, getting a top five, pretty impressive. Alexander Rossi, James Hinchcliffe, the Canadian favorite, Simon Pagenaud, Colton Herta, Santino Ferrucci, and Jack Harvey rounding out the top ten.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, we had Marcus Ericsson, F1 star. He had his first race. He used to race for Alfa Romeo in 2018 and now has come to IndyCar. And it was his debut race, but unfortunately had a mechanical issue. So wasn't able to do too well. Finished 17th, but hopefully he can come around.
Absolutely. Now I want to touch on as well the Formula One testing. Can you break that down for us here?
Yeah, sure. So Formula One testing took place in Barcelona at the Circuit de Catalunya. And basically all the teams showed up and kind of showed the new aero package off and showed what was going to be happening this year. And Mercedes, not looking as strong this year. Defending champ Lewis Hamilton, not looking as fast, but they tend to sandbag their cars in previous years. So what I'm thinking is, again, they might be sandbagging a little bit, but honestly, the Ferraris came out of the gate and they're looking fantastic this year. So Charles Leclerc, new to Ferrari, and Sebastian Vettel returning again. I think that's going to be the team to look out this year. My prediction for this year is I think Ferrari has this year. They have it locked down. I don't think Mercedes is going to be as big as a threat as they were last year. So I don't know. It's just the testing is really shown differently for Mercedes, but you never know until the first race that's coming up this weekend, actually. So I'd look out for Mercedes, then Ferrari, of course. Red Bull, with Hartley behind the wheel now, that might be a little bit interesting. And Renault, look out for Renault. Daniel Ricciardo on that team. They said they were going to start investing more money into the team. So we got to see if they're going to have a turnaround now. They might be able to do something, make something happen, maybe actually get a podium finish this season. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. You're right. The testing season is a little bit different here. And obviously, it's in Barcelona. I'll be on exchange in Spain next year. So I'm going to try and get some boots on the ground here for the Radio Laurier, try and get some footage or some audio or something in Barcelona. I'm really close by and really take a look at that testing. I think that'd be great for everyone involved. Let's look at the schedule for NASCAR here as well. Obviously, we had the Clash of Daytona recently and some other big events. Can you break that down for us?
Yeah, for sure. So four major races have taken place, and I gotta say, this season has been off to a really good start so far. All of the races have been really good. So we'll break it down by race here. We'll go. We'll start off with Daytona, the highlight. Hamlin finally back to victory lane. Last year didn't win a race all season. Comes out this season strong. Takes the win. Second place, Kyle Busch. The one thing Kyle Busch has not done in the sport yet is win a Daytona 500. He's won everything else there is in the sport. And it's just sad to see that, again, he didn't win it. He was a runner-up. It broke his heart, but he's happy for his teammate. Hamlin is his teammate. But, again, not the result he wanted. So he's got next year, so you'll never know. The Stage 1 winner for that race was Kyle Busch. Stage 2 was Ryan Blaney, that he was taken out. There was multi-car incidents in the last stage of the race. The first and second stage were pretty fair, and nothing really happened. But third stage was a lot of mix-ups, a lot of accidents. Then we'll move on to Atlanta. Atlanta was kind of showing off a new package. The only difference was the aero ducts were not in use. but the 550 horsepower engine was in use, and the bigger deck lip spoiler and the larger front splitter. Stage one was Larson, stage two was Kevin Harvick, and those two throughout the race, the battles they were having were out of this world. They were great. They were really showing how Larson, kind of a rookie in the sport, can really hang with the big guys, being Kevin Harvick, former NASCAR champion. So it was pretty interesting to see that happening, and I don't know, more to come from them this season, I think. So Brad Keselowski took the win in that race for Team Penske, and that was also a big thing for him because he was ill over the whole weekend. He missed practice. He didn't qualify even very well. But him overcoming it in the race and being able to win, that was pretty big. So that was another great race. Las Vegas. Not one of my favorite races on the calendar, but man, this one was a good one. This one featured the new aero package, everything, the aero ducts, the splitter and the wing. So it was the complete package. And the restarts for this package are crazy. These cars are going 4 to 5 wide in corners. Like, we have never seen that without somebody crashing into each other. So this is pretty big. So then they start breaking out during the laps following. But man, the restarts are crazy. Stage one winner was Kevin Harvick. Stage two winner was Joey Logano, and Joey Logano was able to win the race. Back-to-back races for Team Penske, showing Penske has the speed in these early races now. So it's really, Team Penske's really coming out of the gate hot here with Brad Keselowski winning, then his teammate Joey Logano winning the week after. So really showing, and Brad Keselowski was also the runner-up for Las Vegas. And that was pretty interesting to see because Penske's really, like, they're not qualifying as well, but they're climbing through the pack. Like, the way they do it is just phenomenal. Those drivers have a lot of skill. And that was the first race since 2002 that didn't have any cautions either, which is a big thing. That's not a very common sight in NASCAR. And lastly, we'll go on to Phoenix here. Phoenix, Delaney grabbed the pole for Team Penske, their third driver. Again, I thought it was going to be another Penske-dominated day, which with my prediction of Blaney winning the race, unfortunately, he wasn't able to capitalize on that. He won Stage 1, Kyle Busch won Stage 2. In the end, Kyle Busch won the race, making it his 199th win in overall in the Cup Series, Xfinity, and Truck Series, which is a milestone in NASCAR, really. Like, the only time we've ever seen somebody win 200 races is Kyle Petty, but he did it all in the Cup Series. So that's more of a milestone, I would say, but still, Kyle Busch is not someone to, like, overlook. Like, that is an impressive thing to do. Like, 53 wins in the Truck Series, 94 in the Xfinity, and 52 in the Cup. That's nothing to, like, kind of go over, you know? He also swept the weekend with winning the Xfinity race and then winning the Cup Series race. And what can I say? Kyle Busch, again, another dominating performance. Hendrick struggling all four races. Again, they struggled at Phoenix. So Johnson was able to get a top 10 finish in 8th, but all the other drivers, Bowman, not up to par. They're not doing.
Yeah, I hear you 100%. We'll have to take a look at some of these guys trying to play with the big names like Larson, and see if Team Penske can keep that momentum going. Okay, we're almost done here. I want to wrap up with the Formula One off-season updates over in Europe and around the world.
So we have a race coming up this Saturday. It's in Australia. It is the season opener since testing has concluded. So now we're on to the season, and it should be pretty exciting. So March 17th, the race in Eastern Time is at 1 a.m., which is a little bit unfortunate for all the people in Ontario watching because it's going to be a little bit late to watch on a Sunday morning. So, yeah, that's really it. Looking forward to it. I'm predicting Ferrari to come out on top, not Charles Leclerc. I don't think he's going to have his debut here with a win. I think Vettel's going to really take it, but also look out for Red Bull.
All right. Thank you, Matthew. We'll have to have you back in due course. I appreciate having you on the show.
No problem. Thank you for having me, Nicola.
All right, folks. That's all for the Crunch this week. I want to thank each and every one of my listeners for tuning in here on a Tuesday night. It's beautiful out. You know, I walked over to the station, and it was sunny the whole walk over, first time in months, so I was really pleased with that. We got other sports on tonight. Washington Capitals defending champs taking on the Penguins, who are two times defending champs previous to them. That'll be a good game, and so much more. That's all I have for this week, folks. I want to thank you all for tuning in. This is the Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. I'll see you next week.